Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, you ever wonder what Phil and I wear while we podcast? You can find out if you join our Patreon. We'll also be talking about the films of 1989, but that's definitely less important than seeing our Zoom backgrounds, our headphone choices, and our sweatshirts.
It's true. You'll get to see all the various pieces of artwork that I have framed on my office wall, and you can see Kenny's garden, sort of. So that's something. That's exciting.
It's a hanging garden.
But perhaps more important than anything, we are doing this Patreon to cover the best films of 1989. Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, with amazing guests like Tom Meissen, Liz Hanna, Joanna Robinson, Brian Cogman, Chuck Hayward. You can sign up at patreon.com/podcastlikeit's1989. And for $5, you'll get access to all the audio of these fantastic episodes. For a few bucks more, you'll get video as well of our 99 and 89 episodes. And perhaps, most importantly, you'll be supporting us so we can just keep making podcast content for you guys.
Hello and welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999, the podcast where we talk about the TV shows of 1999 from atop a football-shaped head here in 2021. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Nybart.
And I'm Felisco.
And with us today from Variety, I believe the chief TV critic at Variety is Caroline Framke.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for giving me an excuse to talk about Hey Arnold.
And who needs an excuse?
We very much appreciate you coming on to talk about this show. A show that I feel like I knew existed just because, you know, I grew up in Canada. So a lot of these Nickelodeon shows kind of made it up to Canada, but didn't all make it up there. And this feels like one of those shows that was clumped in with like Doug and the Rugrats, perhaps that kind of, and I obviously aged out of that around that time. I am older. But my roommate, who is about 10 years younger than me, saw me watching Hey Arnold the other day and was like, this was the greatest show ever. And I grew up on this show and I loved every minute of it. So I think there is a generation gap here, perhaps. But why was this show so important to you, and how did it come into your life?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you talk about it getting clumped in with those others, because it does have roots in that. The creator, Craig Bartlett, started, well, he actually started as an animator on Pee-wee's Playhouse, where he first started making little Hey Arnold shorts, so you can see those somewhere.
Which makes sense, tonally.
Which makes total sense. Yeah. And then he was on Rugrats for a really long time. So Rugrats and Doug predated Hey Arnold by a few years. I think actually, literally today, the day we're recording, is the 30th anniversary of Doug and Rugrats, which is crazy.
There you go.
And I'm not going to think about it too hard. But Hey Arnold was a few years later after he stopped with Rugrats. But I was definitely a Nickelodeon kid. I feel like, you know, there are definitely genres of American TV watching kid. Either your parents don't have any of the channels, so you're watching like PBS. There's like Nick at Night Kid, which was also me, a Nickelodeon kid. And then there was like Disney Channel Kid. And I wasn't a Disney Channel kid.
We don't allow Disney Channel Kids on the
show. I mean, we did do Smart House a few weeks ago, but yeah, I mean, that
I know. Well, there's so many gaps in my knowledge. Like, I was watching all that, Rugrats, right. Doug.
Sure.
I didn't actually watch Ah Real Monsters because it scared me. My mom didn't let me watch Ren and Stimpy because it seemed crude.
Good parenting.
Ren and Stimpy is kind of brilliant, though. I mean,
I'm sure it is. I never watched it at the time. Because
I didn't like it, Kenny?
No, I hate it. Fair enough. I was a Nick kid too, very much so. It was my identity was being a Nick kid, right? You know, the whole kids rule was very important to me. I hated parents. I hated authority. I hated teachers. I wanted Nickelodeon to, you know, slime my school or take over my school very badly. I think The Ringer's doing a whole thing this week on the 30th anniversary of the Nicktoons, and they're expanding that to be a whole Nickelodeon thing. And the article Katie Baker wrote about it starts with a couple paragraphs on the time capsule. Do you remember that?
I remember it vividly.
I remember the last item to go in was Joey Lawrence giving a hat that says, "Whoa," on it, as if anyone would care. So
you
I
did,
am
clearly.
A, I mean, you oh, did. Yeah,
never forgot it. It was what's so weird is like I really thought that was going to be a seminal moment. You know, the time capsule.
Yes.
And in 50 years, kids would be like, "Can you believe what kids were into?" It never stopped. Like there is no gap. Everyone knows exactly what's in the time capsule. Katie Baker just said exactly what's in it. So all right, point being.
But I do feel like I think it's good that you bring up like the no, like it was just all kids, no parents thing, because I do feel like there was kind of, whether on purpose or not, like this branding sort of battle between Disney and Nickelodeon, where Nickelodeon is like, we're for the kids who just like go and play in the mud without their parents and you don't know where they are. And Disney's like a little bit more teacher's pet, let's be real. That I wasn't a teacher's pet sometimes, but like Nickelodeon made me like feel the fantasy of being like the rough.
Well, they're rebellious kids, right? Like they feel a little rebellious, at least within the context. Yeah, I mean, I would say most of these kids feel, because there's so few parental characters or it's adult characters, there is this kind of renegade kind of vibe to them just because they're all kind of
I feel like for me, I mean, I didn't grow up in a city, I grew up in a suburb, but there was still, I could still recognize a little bit of that, like your parents aren't, you know, totally paying attention yet, so you're just like on your street with your friends. Obviously the Hey Arnold kids go way further afield of their street. They go on subways, they go to islands, they go all over the place. But that was such a cool fantasy to sort of vicariously live. And also I do feel like the city in Hey Arnold is so cool and vibrant, and you know, it's such a cliche to be like, it's a character all its own, but that was very much a part of, I've been lucky enough to talk with Craig Bartlett on and off over the years, because I wrote this in my first articles for AV Club. I wrote the 10 like most representative Hey Arnold episodes, and he reached out because he liked it. That was in 2013, which is hard to think about now, but and I'm reading it, and it's not so embarrassing. So if you do want like the 10 episodes of Hey Arnold, you can search for that.
We'll link to the article.
The before times.
Exactly, the before times. But it's just like, he very consciously was like, this city is going to be its own thing. And he borrowed from like New York, Detroit. He's from Seattle, so there's a lot of Seattle in there, Portland, and kind of made this mishmash of the city where I was like, I don't live in the city. I can imagine living in the city. And now I do live in a city, and maybe partly because I was like, hey, Arnold made it look really
cool. Hey, Arnold made you like the city.
Well, I think it's interesting that, so, I mean, you would, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it seems like Hey Arnold is your favorite Nicktoon.
Yeah, I think so. I think I was really into Rugrats, and I was really into Doug, and then Hey Arnold happened, and we're going to talk about her because I chose an episode that's all about Helga G. Pataki, who is like such a revelation to me when I saw her.
Your spirit animal?
Well, when you say, you know, when you ask people the age old question of like, when did you first see yourself on TV? Like, that was it. Like, Helga was it. I mean,
that's amazing.
She was an angry little kid who like secretly wrote about everything and had so many feelings and a really prominent unibrow, which I did have at the time. And I fight back every day of my life because I'm Persian. She's not, but she had the unibrow, so she can be honorarily.
It was one of her defining features, it felt like, that and the hair.
Absolutely. And yes, and the very sticky out hair.
And the anger,
but yes, I think so. Yeah. I loved the show, but I felt so strongly akin to Helga that it just became my favorite. There was no question.
So I think it's, first of all, it's cool that you have a favorite Nicktoon. I as a Nickelodeon kid, I really was only familiar with the first three.
Okay.
You know, the first three dropped basically, I guess, 30 years ago today, but Ren and Stimpy shortly thereafter. Mm-hmm. They were like packaged together. I think Our Real Monsters was the fourth.
I think so. Yeah.
And I think and Our Real Monsters I saw a little bit of, and I think Hey Arnold was the fifth, if I'm not
mistaken. Well, so they all premiered in 91, correct? Am I crazy? 92? Okay.
Yeah. No, 91. 91, you're right.
Yeah, so it would be 91. Yeah.
And then this debuts October 7th, 96. So that's a you know, fair amount of time since the others.
Right. So that's you know, the difference between me being nine and being glued to Nickelodeon and literally everything they put out, I will ingest. And 14 when I'm a little more discerning and probably not watching. So this completely passed me by. And to be honest, and this isn't SpongeBob either, where, you know, it has just washed over the culture in a way you can't ignore. Hey Arnold's a little more under the radar for people, at least of, you know, kind of filling up my micro generation. and so is this, do you feel like Hey Arnold has a large cultural footprint that we just kind of missed or outside of?
I don't know about footprint, which is a shame. I do think there are fans of Hey Arnold. I think it's got a more sizable fan base than might meet the eye, because I know whenever I've written anything about it, I've been pretty overwhelmed by the response. But it's usually people being like, oh my God, Hey Arnold, thank you. No one talks about it. So I don't know that it does. I think it was, then it started streaming, which always helps. It was on Netflix when I first wrote that. Now it's on Hulu. Mm-hmm. Maybe by the end of this conversation, it'll be somewhere else.
I think it's on Paramount Plus as well, or soon to
be. Oh,
yeah, Paramount
with all
Plus.
The Nicktoons.
I think I watched it on Prime.
Who knows?
It's everywhere. I watched it on Hulu. But yeah, I think actually there are a ton of Nicktoons on Paramount Plus right now. I feel like that's something they should be advertising more widely, because when I realized that, I had a solid night of just going through and watching just random episodes or anything, because also the episodes are 11 minutes long. So it's like, what do you have to lose? Yes. And Hey Arnold, I feel like whenever I revisit it, which is, you know, not as often as I used to be, but I do sometimes, I'm always, it really does hold up. And I'm always struck by how much they pack into 11 minutes. It's crazy. The amount of story and texture and character work that they do. So I actually, as someone who, you know, analyzes TV for a living, I'm looking back at it now, and I feel like I always used to answer that the first TV show that made me think about TV was Buffy, but I think it might have been Hey Arnold. Because I was like, these characters, like, they really have a life. I can imagine them having a life in between the episodes, which I think is something that I hadn't experienced to that point. Like, for Rugrats, I just imagine they took naps in between every episode, and then they'd wake up and have this episode. But for Hey Arnold, I was like, these people have such full lives, and we just get to see little pieces of it. And then I could imagine all the rest of it. And for me, that was kind of a revelation as a kid.
Well, I to piggyback on that for a second, you know, as someone who didn't watch all these shows as a kid, and we did an episode on Doug the movie a few months ago, a movie that we didn't particularly like. Doug is just very, I guess, what jumped out at me about Hey Arnold.
Yes, just also critically, Phil, not a Nicktoon at that point. That was a
correct.
Disney
this
production.
Was yes, yes.
So yeah, it was really, had a very yes. different vibe, but still, I think Doug is not the best anyway.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Doug was crazy on Nick, but he was pretty boring as a Disney movie. But that being said, the specificity of Hey Arnold is what I was really kind of impressed by. It really felt like these characters were just very well drawn, literally and figuratively. I just felt like there was just something very specific about it, and wonderfully strange about it. Like, it has a surreal quality to it that, again, I know a lot of kids stuff has that flight of fancy kind of weirdness to it because kids, you know, like that stuff, which is fair. But the Pee-wee thing really kind of hit me where I was like, okay, this makes complete sense that this guy came from that. It's got this oddity to it. I mean, the first episode is essentially Arnold has is being chased to be essentially killed. It feels like there's this real sort of like foreboding kind of component to it. And this darkness that I appreciated. I don't know whether or not kids picked up on that necessarily, but, and we'll get into the episode that we're talking about in a second, but you know, that episode really kind of blew me away, in terms of talking about mental health, talking about therapy, talking about things that you know, just how important it is to make it clear to kids that those type of feelings and talking to people about those feelings is all positive and that there's nothing, you know, that all this good things can come from it. I was really impressed with it. Kenny mentioned that sort of the footprint of Hey Arnold, but I mean, there were two theatrical movies that were made of Hey Arnold. So I'm assuming that it had some sort of a following. But in comparison to the other shows, this show also felt sort of like iconoclastic. It felt a little bit like it was pushing the boundaries more. Again, my knowledge of Rugrats and Doug is relatively shallow, but this almost immediately felt very different to me. I don't know. I mean, Kenny, you go a little deeper on that stuff, and obviously you do too, Carolyn. But how did it feel to you, Kenny, on first blush in terms of?
Well, I mean, I completely agree with you, but not in a loud, noisy way like Ren and Stimpy
right.
was, right?
Right, right, right.
In a subtle way, which I appreciated too. And it's interesting because I can't really before seeing one episode of Hey Arnold, it was hard for me to kind of draw that line from the Nicktoons
yeah.
to the elevated stuff of the 2000s, the Adventure Times, and I love Phineas and Ferb. I think Phineas and Ferb is a great show. And shows like that. And I think Hey Arnold seems like it's that missing link for me, where the animation is still a little crude and the storytelling is still a little... it seemed a little insular, right? Like it didn't seem like we now don't get me wrong. I just watched one episode, but it seemed like it was, you know, pretty, pretty tight with the characters there. The world was pretty, pretty confined, but the content of the episode was incredible. It was
unbelievable.
It was really shocking. And I really do love
that.
I really
I'm so
do
pleased
love
that,
that
you
stuff.
Liked it because I was like, I'm really throwing a curveball at these guys.
It was awesome. But I really appreciate TV shows as a former kid myself that don't speak down to
yes.
children.
Yes.
Really, you know, and with my kids too, even with my young, even with my 4-year-old, I don't want them to watch stupid stuff that babies them. I'd rather have them ask questions about what they're watching and what this means and, you know, kind of explore things they don't understand on their own. So I think I what really surprised me, Caroline, was that this was a Nicktoon because I didn't really understand it. Even SpongeBob, which I know people are crazy about, and there are episodes of SpongeBob which go deeper and are about identity and are about place in the world and that kind of stuff, still seems to be heavy on gross out humor, on absurdism and that kind of stuff. And this just was far more grounded and far more internal. And I really thought it was, I was really into it. I would happily show my kids this. So
yeah, that's That's so great to hear. I love that. I mean, there's definitely like slapstick stuff. Like, I don't know, Phil, if you watched, I gave Phil like a whole, he was like, what about other episodes?
Episodes to watch.
And I was like, here's a list. And oh no, I have more, but I won't do that. But there's definitely slapstick stuff. Like there's definitely like, you know, weirder episodes, but the gross out stuff, not really. And I feel like it was always, there's this thread that goes throughout the show. And you kind of pick up on it, even in that first episode, of not just foreboding, but there is sort of, there's a melancholy throughout the entire thing in a way that's not overwhelming, but they don't shy away from it. You know, these kids get sad. These kids have real problems. When they start getting more into the adults certainly have their own problems. They're rarely the focus, but when they are, it's often very bittersweet in a way that I know as a kid, I had never seen anything like that before, let alone a cartoon.
Yeah, Helga's parents are not great parents.
No, and they never have been. And it's not so, you know, big Beeper Bob is like an emotionally abusive bully. And her mom is a not so subtle alcoholic.
Yes.
And there's a lot of that. Like I definitely, when I have talked to Craig about it, you know, he's very happy to. And I do recommend that anyone who is already into Hey Arnold or curious about it, like, on his Instagram, he's constantly posting like, here's this episode and here's all this stuff about it. And here's all the background stuff. He's very excited to talk about it at any time. And he's always willing to be like, yeah, that's what we were doing with Miriam. She's an alcoholic. Like, good job picking up on that one. The teacher, yeah, he's gay. Like there's a reason why their Thanksgiving was awkward, because his roommate didn't want to come and be his roommate. Like they were layering that stuff in from the beginning, but in a way that, and by the time you get to, so the season that aired in 1999 was season 4. So when I was looking at possibilities of what to bring on the show, I was looking at season 4 and I was like, well, it has to be Helga on the couch. But that's kind of an intense episode to throw you into.
I mean, the pilot doesn't really, I mean, the pilot throws you in too. Like it's almost in media res. Like on some level, it doesn't even really give you any, like it doesn't really introduce you to these kids. And this feels a little bit of a hallmark of perhaps a different type of broadcast television, where you had the courage, I guess, to not do a premise pilot, to just sort of be like, here it is, here's the world, sink or swim. And subsequently, it feels like there was a lot more kind of guardrails put on stuff and a lot more premise pilots.
Right. And I feel like, especially for an animated show like this, like they would have made like a sample. You know, he had those shorts of Hey Arnold from Pee-wee, but they would have made like a little, here's an adventure they would go on. So I feel like that first episode, Downtown is Fruits, where they are dressed up as a banana and a strawberry for their school play, which I love because it's so specifically 90s actually in that way, where it's like, here's the food pyramid and we're the banana and the strawberry, and then they just get lost in the city.
It's great.
So weird and specific, but it's also like, as a kid, I was like, okay, yeah, they're Downtown as Fruits. Like, what's not to get?
But it's kind of dark. But sorry, go ahead, Kenny.
I want to ask you a general question about TV. Phil just brought up something about premise pilots and whatnot. As a critic and a TV watcher, how do you feel about that? What Phil was just talking about? Because when I start writing something, I generally put together a list of a bunch of pilots to watch that are similar, you know, and they generally span the last 50 years of television. And the ones from before, I'd say 1999, give or take, throw you right into it every time. Mm. It's crazy. It's like you are thrown into the deep end. I watched the pilot of Welcome Back, Kotter yesterday, and you are just expected to know what is going on. I'm like, because I'm watching, because I'm like, all right, let's see how Kotter got welcomed back. How did this go? No, he's just back. He's just there. So how do you feel about that? How do you feel about premise pilots and what a platonic ideal of a pilot is, and how you go? Yeah. How would you want to go into a show?
That's a good question. I don't have an intrinsic problem with premise pilots versus not. I do feel like pilots that just throw you in are more confident about their characters, maybe, or their world, in a way where they're like, all right, we have specifically drawn this thing, and because it's specific, you will get it. Whether that's successful or not, you know, that's for the audience to decide. But I do respect that, because I do feel like, I think the biggest problem I have with pilots right now is a lot of the ones I'm watching, and I know that this isn't just, you know, this isn't just on the writers, this is on what studios want or networks or whatever, is they want plot. They want, like, here's the logline, here's the crazy twist, here's the in media res, which, you know, is a whole other rant that I'm sure Alan Sepinwall would, like, pop out of the ether and be like, yes, I also have opinions, because I know he does.
I think I saw a conversation between you guys on Twitter, oh, yeah. And it was,
well,
amazing.
Just like, we had a, it was like
you
a
can absolutely
months.
Rant on.
Yeah, please rant.
I love having TV critics on this podcast, because at some point it just delves into this. So tell me how I can be better.
Yeah, right. Truly.
It was just like, and I mean, it was kind of a, it wasn't really a coincidence, because obviously this is, you know, a trend, a pattern in what is getting made right now. But there was like a 2 or 3 month period where Alan and I were talking back and forth, because seemingly every other pilot we were watching was in media res, was here's a crazy thing, now we're flashing back. Here's the crazy thing, now we're flashing back. And I know that's because, you know, you want to grip people from the beginning. That's the whole point. You want to get people by page 3 tops. You want to get, you know, when you have a million streaming networks, you want people to stay on the show, even though Netflix will count your 2 minutes watching it as a full watch anyway. Again, there are rants on rants here, but I do feel like, you know, I get most frustrated with a pilot when I'm like, I can tell that all you've, the thing you've thought through the most is the plot. And for me, that's actually the least interesting thing. Yep. For me, the most interesting thing of any show, and this is personal, but I do feel like if you have the characters, you have the show.
Totally.
And, you know, for comedies, I grant comedies a little bit more leeway than I do dramas, frankly, because for comedies, the cast chemistry is so important. And so many need those few episodes for the cast to figure out how they're going to bounce off each other. You know, something like a Cheers is just like insanely rare. Yeah. Where they just immediately lock into something. Though then again, the Cheers pilot is so specifically written that they have no choice but to lock into these voices very specifically, and then they cast it well.
Also,
Friends is similar too.
Also a premise pilot from back in the day, weirdly enough. But
yeah.
Right.
Well, I think just to piggyback on what you're saying, Carolyn, about the in media res thing, I wonder if that is a current attempt at having your cake and eating it too, right? Which is, they want that vibe that you get from throwing people in the deep end, but they're not confident enough to kind of stick with it. So they want to kind of try to balance the two. So it's this, to your point, a lot of pilots do this, of just throwing you into a crazy situation and then doing the rewind and how we got there. You know, it does feel like the most recent show, Physical, feels like it did this in a pretty significant way in terms of doing that. And then perhaps not having a lot happen, it seems, in the episodes that came after it. But I guess the question that Kenny has, and I would agree as well, is sort of, do you think there's any positive things that come out of that structure or that format? Because I know that Kenny and I both have been in situations, I'm sure, where a producer, a studio, a network says, you know, it would be great is if you could somehow do something like this.
Every time.
That's why I like don't want to put it all in the writer, because I'm like, I know that this might not have been your idea.
Crazy.
It's crazy.
Every time. They're like, so what if we started in the middle? And then now you're at the point where people are like, I know it's done a lot, but...
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, it's done a lot. Move on. But
I mean, it can be done well, I think.
Sure.
I think White Lotus is doing it well.
But I was just going to say White Lotus is doing pretty well, even though I personally, I mean, I've seen all of it, so I'm not going to spoil anything, but I personally didn't need a dead body from White Lotus. But I think if you're going to do it, and if you're going to do a media res, that's a good way to do it.
And don't you feel like it's a commentary on it? Like that Mike White is kind of like...
I mean,
I would miss out of it a little bit. I don't know who the body is, so I'm not sure.
No. I would say no, except that it's Mike White. So maybe.
Okay.
Fair enough. I mean, I could talk about White Lotus all day, but look, if it's done well, and I think they do it well, it is a nice, it is a nice little extra bonus to have that we go into this with the whodunit element. Like Knives Out, I think had a great little, you know, whodunit of it. That's not what I remember of the movie, right? So,
but
bringing it back to animation, I find myself all the time watching animation pilots and then not watching the series, like the new Fox shows on animation on Sundays and whatnot. And they're generally not premise pilots. They're generally just another episode. I just watched, what's the Northern? It's not called Northern Exposure, obviously.
The Great North.
Great North.
Just throws you right in the deep end there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that animation does almost necessarily.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. these characters don't age. It's not serialized. It's not really about, you know, the new guy coming to town or anything along those lines. It's usually, this is our goofy family. Let's show you how goofy they are. So. Yeah.
And the Adult Swim shows are also very much in that mold of like, we're just, you know, we're going nuts from the jump. I mean, your Rick and Morty's and what have you's, where it's like, these shows are so kind of, you know, crazy, quote unquote, that I think that they're just like, fuck it.
You know, weirdly enough, I think a lot of the quote unquote premise, mm-hmm. the audience knows going into it. It's the log line.
Right.
And that's all you need, right? Like Rick and Morty, it's, you know, it's silly Back to the Future. Go.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so...
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say
that with Hey Arnold, there is a part of me that feels like you don't really need to know more than it's a bunch of kids that live in this they call it on Wikipedia an inner city tenement. Now I know that that seems a lot kind of
it's
darker
loaded.
Than it is. Yeah, I don't really get that vibe from it. No, but
it's like Arnold lives in a boarding house that his grandparents run.
Right.
Yeah. But his
which we don't see in the pilot.
Which you don't see in the pilot at all. Like there's actually, I mean, there's so much that you don't see in the pilot at all. Like, I mean, Helga having the crush on Hey Arnold, which is such a huge thread of the show, is not in the pilot at all. Because
Do fans call him Hey Arnold?
Oh my God. I said having the crush on Hey Arnold. No.
Is that a thing? I don't know.
No, it's
not. No, I love it though.
No, it's not.
Give us a window into the fan base.
It's like when you talk about Good Will Hunting, you talk about the character
Will as Hunting.
Good Will Hunting.
Yeah. Good Will Hunting.
Who would call him Will Hunting? That's not who he is. He's Good Will Hunting.
He's Good Will Hunting.
That's great. She has a, so you know what I love about this show? Another thing that I love from the one episode I watched
Let's go.
Well, it's a couple of things. So you alluded to the idea that the mother is an alcoholic and the teacher is gay, and there are all these things happening kind of outside of the, you know, the grasp of the kids, right? Mm-hmm. And because it's shown from the kids' POV, it doesn't feel like a cheat. It doesn't feel like we're ignoring something by having mm-hmm. the kids just understand what they can understand.
Helga knows her mom has some issue where she's just like asleep half the day. She knows her father sucks, but she doesn't have the vocabulary for it or the full understanding for it.
Exactly, which is the way kids grasp the world, you know? And then the other thing that I think is really kind of great about it is, you know, Phil, you know, alluded to this inner city tenement house, which sounds darker than it is.
Yeah.
Well, an inner city tenement house is dark. But it's not dark to the kids who live there. You know, it's like, I don't know if you've seen the PJ, I'm sure you have, or the Boondocks. Those aren't scary shows. They would be potentially scary if you were showing it from the point of view of a, you know, a 17-year-old or a point of view from someone who doesn't live there and going into an unfamiliar situation. But this is Plato's Cave, right? This is just the world they know.
Right.
And it's not scary. They've learned and are learning how to navigate this world. So I think I think that's a really generous, big-hearted way to look at childhood and to look at, you know, all the different ways people grow up.
Yeah, and not for nothing. I mean, you know, the boarding house owned by his grandparents, you know, Arnold's parents are MIA, which is actually what one of the movies is about, is him figuring out what happened to his parents, who were like, it comes out later that they were like explorers who got lost in the deep jungle. It's a whole thing.
That's awesome.
Sure. So he lives with his grandparents, but you know, there is that sort of like, where are his parents, which isn't answered right away, but it's there. And then there are several episodes throughout the series that focus on one or a couple of the tenants in the house who are just like kind of Arnold's extended family in a way, these long-term residents of the house. Mm-hmm. Like one of the best episodes of the show is another. So Held on the Couch is an unusually long episode. It's the full half hour instead of the 11 minute. Another one like that is a Christmas episode. I think the first Christmas episode where Arnold, realizes that there's this Vietnamese immigrant who lives in the boarding house who hasn't seen his daughter in years. So it's him trying to reunite them. And it's this beautiful, sad, lovely episode that I remember watching and being like, I'm sad and happy and I'm feeling too many things and I'm a very tiny child. But it's one of those things that I'm like, I don't know another, I can't imagine Ren and Stimpy doing that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So that wasn't what Ren and Stimpy was about. But because Hey Arnold establishes this world and establishes, I mean, another wonderful aspect of it, which you see in the Helga on the Couch episode, is that Arnold is this kid with so much empathy. And he's a very observant, kind person, which is why Helga's drawn to him, even if she doesn't want to admit it. And that's something that I see in cartoons now, like Steven Universe, which I also loved. What was on? That was his superpower before he had superpowers, is that was his empathy. And that's Arnold's thing. So establishing that, establishing all these different characters and the way all these works allows them to go deeper in these episodes like this in a way that doesn't feel like it's too ambitious or it's kind of, you know, punching above its weight. Like, I think by the time you get to Helga on the Couch 4 seasons in, the work has been done. And yeah. I remember being excited by this episode as a Helga fan, because I was like, it was almost like Helga's origin story, you know, it's like, we're finally going to find out why she is so obsessed with him. And the answer is so nuanced and smart that he noticed her and made her feel okay, but that she still doesn't feel like she can express that without being laughed at or being or feeling less than. And I was just like, that's just all you needed to know.
There's something very simple and beautiful about that revelation. And admittedly, obviously, Kenny and I had not seen the episodes previous to it. I mean, I watched a handful of episodes, but I'll say that you kind of don't need it, which is the sign of a great episode of television. Where
I'm so psyched to hear that. Like, Kenny, as someone who didn't even watch the pilot, just like jumped right in and immediately got.
And you feel the power of it. It's. I mean, I want so. Just to give a very quick synopsis of this episode, Helga on the Couch, a child psychologist named Dr. Bliss, shadows students of PS 118, quickly following Helga and noting her behavior, especially to Arnold. After punching Brainy in the face, Helga is sent to Dr. Bliss's office for an appointment. Poor Brainy.
That was like, the punching Brainy's a runner in the series, that like whenever she's like, you know, gushing about Arnold in secret, somehow Brainy is behind her and she punches him in the face. So the fact that she gets caught doing it in this episode was a first time thing.
Oh, that's
like, I remember like seeing Brainy on the floor and the teacher being like, what the hell is this? And I was like, oh my God, someone saw it. It actually happened. Brainy's a real person. Like, that's he almost doesn't feel real. Anyway, go on.
So Helga confides in Dr. Bliss about her social life, family life, and her love for Arnold. Kathy Baker was the guest star voice as Dr. Bliss. It aired on December 4th, 1999, story by Craig Bartlett and Steve Vitskin. It was written by Craig Bartlett, directed by Carson Kugler, storyboard director Tim Parsons. I want to just...
Did you guys hear my dogs?
I did hear your dogs briefly, but
my children. Yeah. There's so much going on.
They're all locked away, far away.
I'm the one who's locked away, far away.
I want to just ask a question just before we get into the episode itself. But sure. I want to talk about mental health on television in general and the idea of how it's sort of unpacked, because we're eventually going to talk about The Sopranos. Season one of The Sopranos was in 1999, and we will unpack that series in full, or at least that first season, at a later date. That being said, do we think that that is the best, the most effective, or at the very least, the sort of most groundbreaking depiction of therapy? I'm trying to think of other sort of... Lots of shows go there because, as a writer, and I'm sure Kenny agrees with this, therapy is a huge cheat, the greatest of cheats, right? Where like characters can literally just say what they're feeling and other characters can deconstruct it with them. Yeah. So, and as this episode does, but what are your thoughts about how mental health has been sort of, disseminated on television?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of The Sopranos, I mean, what was so interesting and smart about that is that it wasn't a one-off thing, very specifically not a one-off thing. It's such a fabric of the show, and it feeds into everything, like Tony's shame about feeling this way. And the fact that it is a Tony rather than like a Carmela. It would have been very different if it were Carmela. And
Absolutely.
The fact that it was Tony, I think, was pretty groundbreaking in its way to be like, not only are we going to, it's going to be a mob show, but this mob guy has feelings. And they're not just feelings, but they're like, you know, it's a genuine mental health problems where he, you know, he has panic attacks. Like, it's not just, I feel bad. And I think naming that more specifically, absolutely, was groundbreaking. And, you know, I've thought about this a lot. I feel like 5 years ago, there was a big boom of like depression on TV, or at least in like the shows I was watching that like TV critics love to watch, like You're the Worst and Jack Horseman. What was the other show? I remember writing something about these shows, how they depicted depression, and more specifically for You're the Worst, I think depression in women. I thought it was really interesting how those shows did that. And I think the best depictions of mental health on television are the ones that acknowledge that it's not just a one day thing, but that's also what makes it hard. It's, I think it's why also depicting sobriety on TV is really hard, because that's an everyday thing. So I feel like you have a lot of alcoholics on TV and you don't have a lot of sober people on TV. And I thought that that was something that also BoJack Horseman showed really well, was how hard that is every day. Do that. So I think, but that's something that I think, I'm just thinking about this all out loud right now, but
it, no worries.
I feel like I gravitate towards shows that depict mental health really well, because I think the ones that do that use the tools at TV's disposal, mm-hmm. The things that TV can do that film can't, because TV has more time and it can tell these stories over years and really get into these characters every day in a way that a standalone film can't. I mean, that's why I fell in love with TV in the first place, is that I was like, oh, we're following them over many years.
The episodic nature of it also mm-hmm. fits very neatly into a session.
Well, sure, therapy, and, yeah.
yeah, for therapy, exactly. I agree with everything you're saying, and I think that You're the Worst had a really interesting depiction of depression. I think it's also interesting to see that the other big show that comes out in 99 is The West Wing, mm-hmm. and The West Wing depicts its own version of therapy as well, in terms of Bartlett having to go to therapy and Josh dealing with PTSD and sobriety as well. And it's interesting, because I feel like as writers, it can be a crutch, right? Mm-hmm. And it is
You're talking about therapy sessions.
Sessions. And even just, I would also argue, to some degree, mental health can be used mm-hmm. as a window into a character, as a way to explore something. I'm not saying that these are bad things necessarily, but I guess my question is, how many shows go deep with it and how many shows just kind of stay on the surface? You were going to say something, Kenny?
If it's done poorly, it's the worst thing television has to offer.
Because it can just be sort of monologues at each other where you're just I could tell that the writer just wanted to get some stuff out, you know?
Right.
It's one of the few places, and I guess, you know, this is personal, but it's one of the few places that I do get kind of, on a high horse about, because if you tell these stories poorly or inaccurately, you actually threaten to hurt culture at large. You actually threaten to hurt, you actually threaten to start hurting society. And what I'm really into, like...
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I assume you've watched at least the first few episodes of Ted Lasso.
Oh,
Caroline?
Yeah.
I mean, season two?
Oh, I've seen eight of season two. So, yes.
So, you know where it's going. But, you know, we've watched three. And it, you know, you think about the use of therapists and the use of therapy sessions in television. And I thought the first season's depiction of mental health and mental health problems among, particularly within a person who seems very well adjusted, was fucking brilliant and amazing and reminds me a lot of real life. Mm-hmm. And then Ted's two sentence thing in the beginning about how he feels about therapy, which was, you know, something about healthy Midwestern skepticism and general terror or something along those lines, is, I think, fantastic too. And this is, I think I said this to you, Phil, like kind of opaquely, but this idea that this is what this show needed. Like, this is like what Ted actually needed was someone to come in and let him unpack all the shit he's dealing with. And that's really the only way you can do it in real life. And it's the only way you can do it in television. So I'm super down with the idea of great therapy. And I think The Sopranos is the best show ever made. And part of it is because Tony was not honest with Dr. Melfi throughout so much of it, which is very reminiscent of my own therapy sessions. So I it was really interesting to see a therapy session in what is ostensibly a comedy in 1999, when therapy was mostly used to show how stupid therapy is, mm-hmm. and how stupid therapists are, and how they're all you know, hypocrites and bullshitters. To have the therapist be a great therapist, to ask all the right questions, to take the session as it came to her and gently kind of redirect in a way that, you know, I recognize is good therapy, and actually wind up helping the character.
Yeah. Who is, like, not for nothing, a kid. Like, I feel like still today, whenever I see, like, kids therapists on TV, it's usually to signal that the parents are ridiculous. Or that they're very wealthy and can afford therapy something. Yeah. Like, it's not usually in this way. But like it's like a school therapist who actually wants to help the kid. Like, I feel like it's either the kid's in trouble, which, like, the kid is here. Helga is in trouble, technically. Or it's just like, here's this pampered kid who gets to go to therapy twice a week because the mom doesn't want to deal with it. Like, I still feel like in terms of kids therapy, this is still unique unto itself, this episode.
How about the line right away, right up front, where Helga says, "Are you a child therapist? Because you're not good enough to be an adult therapist." That was like, that's the other thing that, like, you do with children's therapists on TV. Yeah. You make them like dumb baby people,
right? And she's like, "Nope, this is what I wanted to do. I like helping kids."
And she approached it like, you know, 80%. Like with like 80% maturity level. But gosh, I don't want to run to the end, but it's only a 22-minute show. The hug was incredible.
Oh, the hug's amazing. The hug just is really beautiful. I'll also say too, like, I don't know what it's like to be a child therapist, but it felt believable as well, the way that she allowed Helga to kind of work through her stuff, to like switch seats, to get behind the desk, to do all these things, to kind of have that freedom. I mean, one of my favorite moments in it is it's Helga talking about Edward Hopper. And she's like, he's a little simple. What's his deal with women? Is amazing.
I mean,
fair point. That's a very astute question.
I love that too, because I feel like, I mean, from the beginning, Phil, did you happen to watch the first, like, the Little Pink Book episode?
Yes,
like,
I did.
So that's the first one where you see, like, how Helga writes about Arnold in her free time. Yes. And she has this ridiculous vocabulary for a 9-year-old, ostensibly.
She does.
She's very smart. And that's always been a part of it. But it was always kind of like, oh, maybe this is just how she is in her, you know, private life. But I love that the show kind of acknowledges, no, she is, like, a very smart kid. And so for the therapist to be like, oh, so you're smart.
No, for sure. She taps into that
She's frustrated. She's bored.
Absolutely. And that Dr. Bliss can see the potential in this kid is something that probably no one else does, right? I mean, Arnold was nice to her, but he doesn't know Helga's potential. No one else cares.
They don't know about this, like, private life where she's, like, writing all this stuff. And I mean, that was something that, I mean, as a kid, I was writing all the time. Like, that's all I did. And I feel like maybe the 90s were also kind of big for these bookish girls who wrote a lot. Obviously, sure. The Spy was written in the 60s, but the adaptation, the film adaptation came out in the 90s. I was obsessed with it. I had my own little Harry the Spy notebook, like Matilda, very big, with the Mara Wilson adaptation. And I just feel like she was one of those.
The pilot of this was attached to the theatrical run of the movie, How Harry the Spy.
Oh my God, was it? Oh, which is, that explains so much. I mean, I saw Harry the Spy in theaters. I remember that.
I only know that because my roommate was like, wait a second, I saw this in front of some sort of Nickelodeon movie. What was it? And then I went online and it was in front of Harry the Spy. So there it is. It's all coming together.
It is. All the puzzle pieces are falling into place, but it's like she was one of those. And as like a, not bookish, but like, you know, a kid who was like walking to school, reading a book and was writing about everyone and the boy she was obsessed with across the street. Like, I just was like, I understand Helga so much in this way. And something we actually haven't mentioned, but I think is important to Hey Arnold, is that this was the first Nicktoon and one of the only ones that used kids to voice these characters.
Yeah.
All these kids they're all kids. And this is where I shout out Francesca Marie Smith, who voiced Helga the entire run. They did have to cycle out a couple of the boys because puberty, but Francesca voiced Helga throughout. And she, I mean, what an incredible performance. Like, I think she must have been 9 or something when this started. And she was unbelievable from the beginning. And
I also love that.
I also sense that a little bit, you know, like I knew that Rugrats weren't baby voices. Like I knew those were adults voicing babies and that's fine. But I do feel like something in my little kid lizard brain was like, these are kids.
Well, Craig Bartlett's daughter voices young Helga in this episode. Oh. Which I think is adorable.
That's so cute.
So that all that flashback stuff, which again is really interesting. The flashback stuff is great. I also want to mention, you mentioned that the Miriam, is that the mom's name?
Yeah.
Miriam gives Helga a lunch, and in her lunch are wet nap shaving cream and crackers. It's super, like it's funny, but it's
We've
also
all been
sad.
There.
But it's just like, it's one of those things where you're like, oh, she's really looking out for herself. Like she's never been noticed. She's never been particularly valued. She is looking out for herself. And that's why, you know, and it's also, she is like, so you see Harold, who's like the kid with like the soup can shape, whatever, who like the buck teeth who steals her lunch in the first place as a tiny kid. But Helga is the main bully of this show. And I think making her also one of the main characters and giving her this nuance and making you understand why she is that way is so important, because she's not just this like two-dimensional, like freaky bully. She's a kid with pain.
And you know, and that she's doing it to get attention, right? She wants people to notice her. Sorry, Kenny.
You know, in the Rugrats, Angelica is that character.
Yeah, well, I loved Angelica too. I obviously had a type.
And I'm just going to say, we're learning a lot about you, Carol.
Angelica's very cool, I agree. But Angelica really doesn't have that depth.
No, she's just Angelica, spoiled.
She's a tyrant who rules over these babies. And it's fun. And it's for kids. But it's, you know, decidedly surface. And there's definitely, like, there's definitely depth when it comes to Rugrats. I'm not really just going to crap on Rugrats, but
I loved Rugrats.
It's not the same. I couldn't conceive of Rugrats doing an episode it's even coming near the emotional depth of this one episode of this show I saw.
Are they the same age? I forgive me, but like, are the Rugrats younger?
The Rugrats are babies, and Angelica's like supposed to be 3 or 4. Like, and I do feel like for Hey Arnold, they're supposed to be fourth graders, but I feel like they feel more like sixth graders. But I do love that in the show, they're like, the sixth graders are the cool kids. Don't even talk about the eighth graders.
Does Dr. Bliss ever come back?
I think she does, but there's not, I think so, but there's not another episode like this. Not in this depth, I don't think. So this was definitely an unusual episode. This was a deviation a little bit, not so much in terms of like what the show would tackle, but in terms of it just being the longer episode and being, but it definitely, there were many episodes that were just about Helga, as there are episodes that are just about Gerald or just about Helga's friend Phoebe. Sure. Like they definitely go around, but Helga's the second lead of the show. And that was not always the case. I think, I don't remember if Craig said this explicitly, but I do think that they recognized early on that they had something pretty special with her and with Francesca voicing her, and gave her more and more to do. And also, you know, the tension between her secret and how she acted to Arnold. Just that's so fun for a kid's show.
There's also, yeah, it's got a real Jekyll and Hyde kind of vibe to it.
Oh, it's nice.
Definitely, it's definitely got this. The I know that you didn't watch the previous episodes, Kenny, but she has this locket where she has a picture of Arnold that she like talks to, like Gollum talks to the ring.
That's exactly what it is. It's like, yeah, she's, you know, she's storming along through the hallways or whatever, and then she'll like steal behind a trash can and be like, "What a maroon!" And yet, and then turn to her. And the precious. And yet, it made me laugh every time as a kid because I was like, "Here it comes! Good. Here's the monologue about how much
it's fantastic.
She actually loves him."
It's really overt and just it's great. It really is the Pink Little Book is a perfect episode where essentially they find her book. Arnold and his friend, forgive me, I can't remember his friend's name. Gerald, find the book. And sort of this insane journey that she goes on to try to get the book back or whatever. But it's there's something very it does feel like the stuff that goes on in the heads of children around that age. And which is heightened and is kind of, you know, you're so inside your own head. You're so obsessed with your own thoughts and your own feelings that you don't really understand. Yeah. I feel like this show really understands that. Like it's really tapped into that. Which made it feel very
seriously. Very real. And you feel that from the beginning that it's like, yeah, these kids are people. And we're going to take their entire lives seriously. And the more it got the time to flesh them out, the better it got. Though I do think, you know, if you watch those early episodes, I hadn't done that in a minute and then immediately watch Hug on the Couch, you see there is a difference. Like yes, the early yes. seasons are much more like obviously pencil drawn and they're much more, well, I guess contained isn't the right word, but they do get more ambitious in terms of the storytelling, in terms of sure. like, we're going to dive into the psyche here. But they still feel of the same show, which I feel like sometimes with animated shows, it can feel like a totally different show, you know, two seasons in. And that did not feel the case for me.
I do have one other question. In regards to Helga's background, I mean, her name is Helga.
Yeah.
Her sister's name is Olga.
Yeah.
They don't seem particularly Eastern European or however.
I think that's just kind of like their, you know, general ethnicity background. Like there are definitely depictions of, you know, first generation immigrants throughout the show, but I don't think the Patakis are that necessarily.
It didn't feel that way. Patakis. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just the Patakis.
Yeah. They're just the Patakis. They're definitely, I mean, the Olga episodes are, I remember watching those and feeling my blood boil and being like, Olga's not so great. Olga's not so great.
Olga seemed pretty great. I don't know.
There's one episode when she's like a substitute teacher, and you sound like all the boys in that episode who loved Olga.
Well, she could just play the piano. She could play Beethoven.
Yeah,
she's very nice. So then you see Beethoven. I mean, then it's like, yeah, I love that. Like, she's this very like high-minded, whatever. And the parents are just like, "Do you see this? Get a load of that." And I mean, I love that sort of like little class conflict there too. Great. But showing even just like a snippet of Olga, you're like, oh, so Helga decided to be the opposite of that because she wasn't going to get attention being anything similar. So you might as well be deeply unpleasant.
Yeah.
There, I do want to just for a moment underline or highlight there's a surreal moment in this episode that kind of bookends the episode, which is a bunch of lemons that fall on the ground that Helga sees as Arnold's head. And they're kind of mocking her as she's going to therapy. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, she sees them all on the tray and they're all like, good for you. They're all like cheering her up and things are all good. And it's lovely. It's kind of bizarre, but it's kind of, there is something nice about as a sort of visual bookend and for a way of showing what's going on inside Helga's head, that we get to see that she has grown, not just with the hug of Dr. Bliss, which obviously shows that as well, but just that like, and the reason I say that is because shortly before she sees the lemons giving her the thumbs up, she bumps into Arnold in the street. She's abusive to him yet again. She punches Brainy in the face in an alleyway after he gives her. So it's like, we're not, I appreciate that the show is saying, like, don't worry, Helga's still Helga, but she's grown. Like, they're trying to have their cake and eat it too.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that, like, the one thing with this episode, I do love that the therapist is like, it's okay to have a crush and it's okay to not tell him. Like, that's fine. I do think, as you see throughout the show, she is obsessive to a point where, like, if the therapist knew the extent of her obsession, might be like, you could dial it back a tad.
Doesn't she say it's okay to punch him in the face still?
No, she says don't. She says, don't punch Brainy. Don't punch Brainy. But, you know, Helga's like, what about the rituals and my bubblegum shrine? And she's like, I guess if you're not hurting anyone.
Did you say bubblegum?
Yeah, exactly.
I have a question.
Please. This is fun.
If I put this episode on as a one-act play, do you think people would come?
I mean, I would.
Would I make money? I think this could be a one-act play.
It's great.
Yeah,
I agree.
It really is.
It is. It's really. I think it could be a one-act play, and I think people would really enjoy it. So I'm going to try to.
I agree.
I'm going to watch the 200 episodes of the show, so I have a real clear understanding of what's happening before I dive in. But I think it would be really cool. I think it'd be great and COVID friendly.
Yeah, there you go. No, yeah, it's almost a bottle episode.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, I'd be remiss if I noticed a Jenny Lewis poster behind you. We're doing a Patreon on 1989, and I'm curious as to your thoughts on The Wizard and True Beverly Hills, two Jenny Lewis classics. Are you a fan, or do you not know her acting? You've never seen either.
Seen them,
Just a fan of her music, which is completely fair.
You haven't seen True Beverly Hills?
No, I know. I missed a bunch of these. No, I had a mother who didn't care about kids' movies, so we just never went. I didn't see The Mighty Ducks until 2 years ago.
Okay.
I haven't seen Goonies. Like, there's just like a whole world of stuff I had not seen.
You can live without Goonies.
I know that now.
Don't tell Sarah
I hadn't seen Hook, and people got mad at me for that, but Hook does not hold up as an adult.
Hook's not that great.
There are just a bunch of movies that I'm like, if I watch it now, I don't want to shit on anyone's like favorite childhood thing. That's not my thing. Yes. But I do feel like there's a whole like world of kids entertainment that I didn't see. And that I keep saying not for nothing, but that is a reason why I think I watched a lot of Hey Arnold. Was that my mom, bless her, she never did kind of tolerate shows she found annoying being on. Like, she just, it just doesn't interest her.
Sure.
I think the most annoying show she would let me watch is Sabrina the Teenage Witch, which now that I have tried to rewatch it, it was annoying. It was very loud.
I was going to say.
It's super loud. That,
pretty good of her. That show is so annoying.
It's very annoying, and I loved it. I loved it so much. And I watch it, and I'm like, oh, just a lot of yelling. But that's also why I didn't watch Seinfeld, because she had an ex-boyfriend who was very Jerry. It was like, there's just like, there was a bunch of stuff.
Interesting.
If she didn't want to watch it, we weren't going to watch it. But Hey Arnold, she liked. Because I think she recognized that it wasn't condescending and that she could also watch it and appreciate stuff about it that I wasn't necessarily getting. But I remember that Hey Arnold was one of the few that she was like, no, this one's good.
It is good is the thing. Like, what your mom tapped into is the fact that, you know, we're all adults here. We sat down, we watched some Hey Arnold, and it holds up in a way that not to keep shitting on Doug, but...
I liked Doug, but...
But just to bring it full circle, because I do feel like, as someone who's coming into this completely cold and not knowing this world, really, this show actually spoke to me. Like, I feel like this show actually connected in a way with adults that those other shows weren't really attempting to do. So I'm not really slagging them. I'm just saying, like, that they were just aiming at a younger demo, and they were going at something that was just very, slightly, I don't want to say easier, but just different. This show's doing something really special. So
yeah, I always found it interesting that he came out of Rugrats, and you can see some of that in Hey Arnold, but this is very much a different thing that I do find can get much deeper in a way that continues to speak to me. Like, I think the reason why I hold on to it so much is because this was a show that I recognized early on as being good, and it's so nice to go back and be like, oh, it's actually good. It's not just that I thought it was good at the time. Yeah. It wasn't Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and I just like, thought it was fun. It's actually good. And that's always such a relief. And I'm sure that that's something you guys talk about a lot on this kind of show, where you're like, was it good, or did we just think it was entertaining at the time?
We've had both experiences.
We've had both, you know? For sure.
We've certainly had experiences where we were humiliated for our younger selves, and other times where we felt like we were, you know, little sages. Yeah. So
this one definitely makes me feel pretty smug about my early TV taste. So, and,
which is
cool. As a TV critic, I must be smug about my TV choices.
Absolutely.
This is one of the first ones that let me do that.
Yeah. Can you tell us what you love right now?
What I love right now. That's a good question. I'm just back from a 2-week vacation. I feel like I don't understand anything that's happening now because I don't know when anything's on. I'm like watching everything that's not even on. Let me look. I mean, White Lotus, great.
Sure,
I knew early on that that would be a thing, but I am gratified by the fact that it is, and very pleased actually that it's getting a second season in a way that I feel like makes sense, because
I agree.
I was very much vocally against Big Little Lies season 2, and I was right.
You were right.
I was right. But I feel like, I was like, if you had
vocally the same- against season 1.
Wow.
Well, I like season 1 more than
speaking
I meant
of to, that's but, what I think of when I think of therapy sessions done for the sake of having a character come out and say exactly what she's thinking.
Sure. Sure.
Yep.
That's fair.
That was definitely a shortcut. I mean, that's
the thing about
David
Big Little
Kelly
Lies
thing, though. So
when Kenny and I were back when that was on and the second season announcement came out, I was like, if they just use Big Little Lies as an umbrella for the same cast but a different murder
that's
mystery,
what I was just going to say.
That would have been interesting, like, but I don't want to. Yeah.
Very much in favor of that, because obviously the cast loved each other and had a good chemistry, but they didn't do that, and that's a shame. White Lotus, good. Ted Lasso, very good.
Very good, I
will say, you know, without spoiling anything, that I'm very into what this season is doing, and I think it's extremely, like, they very self-consciously were like, we want to make this a darker season. People are going to face their shit. So they do. And the therapy obviously plays a part in that. And I really appreciate that Sharon does become much like more of a character in her own right. Cause I do feel like, and this is something we didn't touch on, but you know, the Black woman therapist is such a trope. And I feel like there are a couple shows this year between Ted Lasso and Uzu Aduba in Treatment that are very consciously pushing back against that trope and making that person more of a character. So Ted Lasso, good. And also I will say, as someone who, over the pandemic, became much more intensely obsessed with the Premier League, because what else was I doing? I think it's quite timely that Ted Lasso is talking about mental health in sports and soccer.
As we saw
with also Simone Biles in the Olympics. They clearly tapped into something that is in the water right now. So I think that that's great. I would also like to remind people that Tuca and Birdie is airing a second season on Cartoon Network. Mm-hmm. It is not on Netflix. I know that it's not as easy, but it's still a great show, and you should still watch it.
I need to check it out. I've not seen that third season.
And it just got a third season, which I'm very pleased about, because, I mean, Lisa Hannah-Walt is part of the reason, is a big part of the reason why BoJack Horseman was as fun and interesting as it was. You know, she designed all those characters. So seeing what comes from her own brain more directly for her own show was really cool, and I'm very glad she got the chance to do it again.
Well, and that kind of brings us full circle in the sense that, and I'm curious as to your thoughts on animation that's aimed at adults, because it does feel like that is a hurdle for a lot of people. I know I have lots of friends that getting them to watch an animated show feels like a chore. You know what I mean? And I think it's really interesting to see BoJack is an example of that. I mean, I think to a certain extent, Rick and Morty is a version of that, just sort of trying to break down that barrier. And I think in its own way, Hey Arnold was kind of trying to do that as well, in terms of thinking slightly outside the box, trying to push the boundaries of what we preconceived notions of animation. And I'm assuming that, forgive me, Tuca and my apologies, Birdie, yes, is trying to do that as well.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's working? Do you think that it's getting through to people? I mean, as someone who's obviously clearly Hey Arnold had quite an effect on you in the sense that you're still watching a lot of animated shows, do you feel as though it's finally breaking down some of those barriers?
I don't know. I think if people want to be snobby about animated shows, I'm not sure how much you can really change their minds, unfortunately.
Right.
But I think people who are interested in good television and creative storytelling should give more of them a shot, because in animation, you can do different things. You can push some stuff. You can have bigger performances in a way. Like, I think of something like, I don't know, a Bob's Burgers. That show could not be animated and could still be that show, but it's such a part of the fabric of the show that it is.
Totally.
Because it's a tone and a vibe thing, right? And if you're not into that, I think it's a shame to write off any genre. I say that also being an enormous like horror wimp myself. So horror is not my thing generally, but I wouldn't necessarily write off the entire genre as being not like bad, obviously.
Right.
I think there's good, bad, and mediocre stuff in any genre. I think that's the same for animation. But good and great animation is worth it. And immersive in a way that I think other shows might not be. Like, I definitely find that when I get into an animated show like Hey Arnold, like Steven Universe, like Too Good and Birdie, I get enveloped in the world in a way that is like very easy for me to just sort of, you know, it's both of our world and of its own world.
Sure.
I don't know if I'm explaining that.
No, absolutely.
I think that there's something to that.
I think that Kenny and I know that we've had this discussion on numerous occasions as writers when we're developing things, because there are moments with certain projects where you say to yourself, well, maybe this is animated, right? Like it gives us a freedom to do things that we can't do when it's live action. Also, budgetarily speaking, there's all sorts of things that you can do, obviously, through animation that is much harder to do in live action. And I would say as a viewer, you feel that freedom, right? Like there's just that ability for them to do kind of anything they want, which I think to some viewers is exciting and to other viewers feels, you know, as though it's not bound to anything, which I think, you know, but do you agree, Kenny? Do you feel like in terms of your stuff, have you ever considered doing, I think there's been stuff you've thought about doing that's animated.
I had an animated show at FX, didn't get picked up. But I kind of consciously wrote it like it was a 70s sitcom starring George Segal. So
sure.
It might be why it didn't get picked up. But as I said in our last talk with Sarah, you know, I don't like to be boxed in any way and kind of leave all the options open in terms of
sure.
the format for whatever I'm doing. But
can I actually say, I think speaking please. Of 70s yeah. sitcom, I just remembered another part of the episode I wanted to quickly
absolutely
mention is that you know, there's that part of the episode where like it is the flashback and it's done almost as like a sitcom, like a, you know, you hear the laugh track because there's a TV on in the background and it's like
out of Natural Born Killers. I know.
It's so
crazy.
It's really, I think that's just so well done. And I watched it and I was like, Kevin can F himself who? Like,
yeah.
Look at what they did in 99. And also, you know, that's something that like in live action, I really do admire how they like go for it and Kevin can F himself. But it's like, it's hard. That's a hard thing to pull off. And in the animation, it's that much easier to kind of like go between the genres and make that sort of thematically appropriate for what she imagines, this sort of like fucked up family sitcom in her head when she imagines her past. And I just remember, that's not a moment I remembered before rewatching this for this episode. And I was like, that was smart. Like, it's just a
There's a metatextuality for sure to it. That idea of that acknowledgement of other medium, and it's pretty brilliant. Yeah, Kenny?
What do you think of Kevin Can F himself?
I haven't seen the whole season yet. I liked what I saw of it. I thought that it was, I thought it was really interesting, and that I like seeing Annie Murphy do more stuff, because before they swept the Emmys, I was like, she is the undersung person, and then she won an Emmy, so now I can't say that. But I think she's so good. I do. And now, after I wrote my review, do you guys know John Levenstein? He was a Kroll Show producer and Arrested Development and all that. He replied, and his like big sticking point with the show, and I can't totally fault him. He was like, in which ones of these like sitcoms does the wife just take it? Like the wife's always like being mean back. And I was like, well, that's true. Like, so
it goes back to like the Honeymooners. I mean, it's like, you could go, it's pretty amazing.
So it does kind of like undermine its own premise in that way, but I think, you know, the people doing the sitcom acting are nailing it. I think it's interesting, and frankly, I would rather have interesting and, you know, maybe not as successful than, you know, fine and boring.
I completely agree with you.
I agree on that for sure.
I've watched four episodes of it, and I'm rooting for it very hard. Because yes, why wouldn't you want stuff that breaks out of the mold and whatnot? I don't have the same issue that John Levenstein has. I don't need.
I mean,
to
I
do
love it. It was such a him. Like I love John. I've known him for a while, and it was just such a him note to make.
Sure,
where he was
sure.
just like, I don't know that that trope makes sense. And I was like, fine, John, but like it's still, like it's interesting.
But I don't know. I mean, like the inciting incident of that show's conception. Being that Aaron Hayes was written off the show when they felt like they didn't fucking need her
killed
anymore.
Killed off the show. Yeah.
Killed off Crazy. The show when they're like, we can get Leah Remini and do, you know, the covert so eighth crazy. Season of King of Queens. That's enough. Like that's enough. Like it's not really about that. It's whatever. I don't need to, I wasn't even going to defend the show. I'm kind of thrilled by shows like that, root for it very hard. My issue with the show, and this is very executive-y and like the worst executives who I want to go away, is how do you keep this going? But you know, how do you keep Ted Lasso going? Like the great writers find a way. So yeah. you know,
I also think we have got to a place now where you don't need five seasons of a show. I mean, they've been pretty open about Ted Lasso perhaps only being three seasons long.
Yeah, like, that's always been the plan.
I think that it's taken this hemisphere a very long time to get on board with what the Brits have been doing, it seems, since the invention of television, which is we're going to do as many of them as it's good. And if we feel like we're done, we're done.
Don't you want that money.
Like British shows have six episodes or they have 600. There's no in between. That was one of the good places, I think. One of the good places' best jokes about that. Like one of her favorite shows, like running for 30 years, it has 12 episodes, something like that. So funny.
It's brilliant.
That is good.
Well, thank you so, so much for talking about Hey Arnold.
Yeah, no, thank you for letting me, and I'm so glad you like the show. Please let me know if you keep watching it. It's great.
This was a blast. Again, one of the great things about this podcast, I think I can speak for Kenny, is getting exposed to stuff that we just didn't either know existed or hadn't watched before. And this was just a really lovely addition to the pantheon of 1999. So we really do appreciate it.
I love that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Caroline. One last thing. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Speaking of subscribing, check out our Patreon on all the best films of 1989. Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Fabulous Baker Boys, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, Field of Dreams, Major League, and many, many more. We are covering all the best films of 1989 with amazing guests like Joanna Robinson, Liz Hanna, Hunter Covington, Brian Cogman, David Iserson, and many, many more. All your favorite guests from our 1999 podcast are coming on to the 1989 Patreon. You can sign up for it at patreon.com/podcastlikeit's1989. For only $5, you get access to all of these awesome episodes. And for a few bucks more, you get video of our 1999 episodes as well. Plus, there are other very cool tiers too, where you can even be a guest on our podcast. Please check out our Reddit as well at reddit.com/podcastlikeits. We're also on Twitter at podcastlikeits1999. We're also on Instagram at podcastlikeits1999. Thank you so much to Ernie and Will for producing our episodes, Sullivan for our social media, Jan Katas for our amazing art and theme songs, and most of all, thank you all for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.